Your computer makes thousands of connections every day, just like the one it's making now to deliver you your audio content. Why not unlock some little connections of your own? Pick up a box of Cadbury Heroes today, stay at home, and share them with your family or friends. Sometimes it's the little things that bring us together.
Beethoven, okay? He looked at a piano and it just made sense to him. He could just play.
So what are you saying? You play the piano?
No, not a lick. I mean, I couldn't paint you a picture. I probably can't hit the ball out of Fenway. I can't play the piano.
But you can do my outcome paper in under an hour.
Right. Well, I mean, when it came to stuff like that, I could always just play.
Son, I've been sitting here for 10 minutes now looking over this rap sheet of yours.
I've spoken to the judge, and he's agreed to release
assault.
You.
September 93, assault. Grand theft auto, February 94.
But under two conditions. What are those? First condition is that you meet with me every week.
What for?
Combinatorial mathematics. Finite math.
Sounds like a real hoot.
I'm also aware that you've been through several foster homes. The state removed you from 3 because of serious physical abuse. You know, another...
And the second condition is that you see a therapist.
I'll do the math, but I'm not going to meet with any fucking therapist.
For every instance of the mad genius that one can bring to mind, there's 5 or 10 instances of highly creative or even genius people. Da Vinci comes to mind that didn't have a whiff of madness about
them. Joey, first of all, a big congratulations to you. I mean, you are one of the youngest musicians ever to be nominated for a Grammy Award. That's a huge accomplishment. You're only 12 years old.
He has got more going for him than anyone. He is Einstein of our era.
Do you know how easy this is for me? Do you have any fucking idea how easy this is? This is a fucking joke.
This student will be heading off to university, age 12.
Intelligence is really about figuring problems out that have beginning and an end. This is in contrast to creativity, which is about problem making as opposed to problem solving.
My boy's wicked smart.
Hello and welcome to Science-ish. I'm Rick Edwards, joined as ever by Dr. Michael Brooks.
Hello.
There he is. This week, I am going to be holding your hand, metaphorically.
Oh.
And it's really for all you narcissists, because we're going to be looking at the science of what makes you a genius.
And presumably you count yourself amongst the genius narcissists?
I don't think I do, but only because...
You're not a genius.
I've been doing lots of reading about what makes a genius, and I've got bad news for myself. It ain't me.
Narcissist, tick.
Narcissist, not a problem. And I knew I had that in the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, genius, not so much. Turns out I'm just good at exams.
Do you know what? Probably didn't need much research for that. If you'd asked me, I could have told you.
And how about you?
I know I'm not a genius. Many people have said it, but I always refute it.
What, many people have said you're not a genius? That is true.
Yeah, maybe.
And the piece of fiction we're looking at here, to get into it, is... It's a good one, actually. It's really nice.
Go on.
One of my top 20 films. Good Will Hunting.
Oh, yes. Superb film.
Absolutely superb. How many times have you seen it?
Probably... 4 or 5 that I can think of.
It can easily stand up to 4 or 5 viewings, I'd
yeah,
say.
Yeah.
Great film.
My contention is that prior to the Revolutionary War, the economic modalities, especially in the southern colonies, could most aptly be characterized as agrarian pre-capital.
All right, of course that's your contention. You're a first-year grad student. You just got finished reading some Marxian historian, B. Garrison problem.
The premise is pretty straightforward. Matt Damon plays Will Hunting. He's working as a janitor. He hangs out with his mates from kind of the rough Boston neighborhood. They kind of dick about and get in trouble.
But, I mean, if you have a problem like that, I mean, we could just step outside. We could figure it out.
Oh, man, there's no problem.
But Matt Damon is also a self-taught genius. And that comes to light when he's cleaning in the university that he works at. And a maths professor has left up a problem on the board. And he just sort of idly just has a look, solves it, writes it up. And then the maths professor gets quite interested in him and tries to kind of mentor him.
This can't be right. It'll be very embarrassing. Do you ever consider...
I'm pretty sure it's right.
Did you think of the possibility?
Right. Just take it home with you.
And then Will Hunting gets into some trouble with the police, and to get him out of it, the professor says, come and be taught by me, but also you have to get therapy, and he gets therapy from Robin Williams' character.
I look at you, I don't see an intelligent, confident man. I see a cocky, scared, shitless kid. But you're a genius, Will. No one denies that.
And that's sort of it, really. And,
okay.
And there's a love interest.
I mean, to be fair, you've just given us a good 5 minutes on...
I really love this film. And that's also, genuinely, I don't think I've seen it for probably 10 years.
Well, we've had a full recap. So what's the big question we're going to tackle this week?
So the big question is genius innate?
And who's going to knock it out of the park for us this week?
A guy called Rex Jung. Not related to Carl, as far as we know. But he is an assistant professor of neurosurgery at the University of New Mexico. And his area is positive neuroscience, so the study of what the brain does well.
Intelligence has many definitions, but I guess for the layperson, it's being smart, being able to figure things out. There are many scientific definitions of intelligence. Most of them run sentences and paragraphs long. I like to think of it from a brain perspective, and it's the ability to solve problems rapidly and accurately. And if you solve problems too rapidly, you make mistakes, and if you take too much time, you get eaten by other species. So it really is that dynamic interplay between speed and accuracy trade-offs.
Here at the Institute, Professor Charles Passerell, Dr. Peaches Barkowitz, and myself have been working on the theory originally postulated by the late Dr. Kramer that the penguin is intrinsically more intelligent than the human being.
We certainly found, in terms of intelligence, that bigger, better, stronger, more white matter, more gray matter, that really was correlated with better intellectual functioning, higher IQs in humans. Even across the animal phylum, you can see that if you line up animals in terms of their brain size, or what's called encephalization, brain-to-body ratio, you get humans up towards the top, and, you know, mice and shrews and things like that closer to the bottom.
If we increase the size of the penguin until it is the same height as the man, and then compare the relative brain sizes, we now find that the penguin's brain is still smaller. But, and this is the point, it is larger than it was.
They have relatively rare samples of famous people's brains, but the most famous example is Einstein, who died of an aortic aneurysm.
Einstein became ill in Princeton. Mm-hmm. He was taken to the Princeton Hospital, mm-hmm. and he died. And he had told people in his family and his lawyer, executive officer, that he wouldn't be averse to having me look at a brain. He knew I was a neuropathologist.
His brain was extracted upon his death and weighed and taken pictures of. And so we do have this prototypical example of the brain of a genius. And it was rather unremarkable. It was, I think, about 1,200 grams on extraction, which is average.
And this is some of the photographs I took of Einstein's microscopic sections of the brain, stained by different methods. You see? This is the coronary artery. This is the brain cell.
But he was also in his 70s when he died. So for his age, that is not unusual to have a shrunken brain. But just looking at the brain of Einstein and measuring it would not tell you that he was the genius that he was just on the surface.
When they said, how do you know he was a genius? I said, not from looking at his brain. It's what his brain did that made him a genius.
If only they'd cut his brain out when he was younger.
Yeah, missed a trick, didn't they?
Yeah.
Sorry, Albert, appreciate all the work you're doing, but we really need to have a look at this brain of yours.
So, obviously, Einstein is one of those people that we say definitely a genius. And,
yeah.
And we say, you know, we look back and we say somebody like Leonardo da Vinci, there's a guy who is a genius. But do we have a way of sort of putting the physiology of the brain together with intelligence?
Sort of. It's quite contentious, really. But Dr. Rex has probably the best model out there, and it's called the parietofrontal integration theory.
Nice.
Previously, when we looked at brain scans, we thought the frontal lobes are what are responsible for intelligence. And that's where you do, you know, your planning, your organization, lots of higher functions. But Rex and one of his colleagues looked and said, actually, yes, it's absolutely involved, but it's also to do with the connection between the frontal lobes and then the parietal region towards the back. And the parietal region is the bit that does all of the kind of sensory integration, so everything you're getting from your eyes and ears and so on. And the link between those. And you can kind of see that, because if you damage the frontal lobes, you'll lose lots of higher functions. But it weirdly doesn't seem to do anything to your IQ. So it only rarely degrade your IQ. So that immediately implies that something else is going on there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's his model that people are sort of, I think, fairly accepting of. And it's also about, as he said earlier, about having more white matter, more grey matter. So having more white matter and grey matter seems to increase your intelligence. So white matter is like the wiring that connects the processing regions, the processing nodes of the brain, and then the processing nodes themselves are made up of grey matter, which are the cells that actually do the thinking, if you like.
You talked about IQ tests and measuring intelligence, and how good is that measure of how intelligent somebody is, how successful they're going to be in life? Are we any good at coming up with really good measures of intelligence?
The first thing you have to do is try and come up with a decent definition of intelligence.
And we can't.
And that's tricky. So one that I think Rex uses is to say it's the ability to use this kind of deductive reasoning. So it's that thing of solving adaptive problems in your environment, but doing it rapidly and accurately. And you can, exactly as he said, you can see how that would be useful in allowing you to survive.
Yeah.
Because you need to sort of figure stuff out before you get eaten. And this kind of deductive reasoning is quite sort of rule-based. So you're establishing like cause and effect relationships in the world around you. And that's kind of what IQ tests are trying to test. But, realistically, what IQ tests do is tell you whether someone is good at IQ tests.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fundamentally what they do. And then that correlates, we think, with intelligence. But equally, the thing about IQ tests is they aren't necessarily going to find you geniuses. So one quite sort of basic definition of a genius is someone, so like the Mensa definition, having an IQ above 140.
Yeah.
However, it's often been remarked that lots of celebrated geniuses wouldn't have had particularly high IQs. So immediately you think, all right, well, we're missing something here. And
we need a better test.
Well, yes, or we might just have to accept that we can't come up with a test because there's too many variables and factors involved. But they think that the thing with a genius is that they are answering a genius level question in an IQ test. So one that suggests you have an IQ above 140 does not make you a genius, because the thing that geniuses seem to do, the sort of common denominator, is ask new questions. Whereas IQ tests obviously are comprised of questions that already have answers. Yeah. And they think that someone like Einstein would effectively have looked at one of these questions and seen lots more questions and lots of answers that are kind of possible. And your sort of brain goes off in all sorts of different directions and then gets confused and therefore doesn't do particularly well at the test.
Right.
See, the sad thing about a guy like you is in 50 years, you're going to start doing some thinking on your own, and you're going to come up with the fact that there are two certainties in life. One, don't do that. And two, you dropped 150 grand on a fucking education you could have got for $1.50 in late charges at the public library.
Yeah, but I will have a degree. And you'll be serving my kids fries at a drive-thru on our way to a skiing trip.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but at least I won't be unoriginal.
The suggestion now is that creativity is going to play a really important role, because what geniuses are doing, and they're kind of making these kind of intuitive links between stuff that other people haven't made, and almost like creating new questions. So and starting not necessarily by identifying a problem, but just looking at ideas. So you kind of search for ideas, and then out of those ideas will emerge questions, and then lots of trial and error until you end up coming up with a solution to a problem that other people didn't even realize existed.
Mm.
But what you need for that as well is this huge amount of grit and kind of, you need to be super productive. You need to just keep going and going and going. And like lots of people have spoken about this thing of how geniuses have loads and loads of really bad ideas. So like Edison, he had just over 1,000 patents that got accepted, a lot of others that didn't get accepted. And of the 1,000 that did get accepted, I mean, 2 or 3 are the ones that we talk about.
Right.
But we don't really mind. Don't really care about that because he's done some amazing stuff. But so it's all sort of trial and error and you know, not being fearful of the fact that this might not be the next big thing.
Right.
And creativity is a thing that comes up a lot when people talk about genius now. And it's quite a tricky thing because defining what creativity is scientifically is quite hard. But we put it to Professor Jung.
The definition of creativity is the production of something novel and useful. And if you remember my definition of intelligence, which was rapid and accurate problem solving, novel and useful problem solving is quite different from creativity. It's a slower process. It is looking for problems that are relatively rare, and this is where abductive reasoning comes to bear, where you are often generating hypotheses and trying to literally look outside the box or solve problems outside of a constrained set. Again, that tension between novelty on the one hand and utility on the other, it creates a dynamic tension between different neural architectures. So when you're doing novelty generation, you want to inhibit the error checker. You want to take your foot off the brake, if you will. So when you're generating novelty, you don't want to check your ideas. So you generally are downregulating frontal lobe structures that are in service of inhibiting prepotent, what we call responses or regular responses. So you want to make things weird and strange and crazy, if you will. So sometimes in dream states or meditative states or when you're taking a shower or a long run or something like that, these strange ideas might come to you because the ideas are more likely to run into each other in neural networks when the inhibitory controls are downregulated temporarily or transiently. You're going to need those later when you try to implement that creative idea. If you're a painter or writer or a scientist, when you try to figure out if that idea is worth pursuing and then pursue it out in the world, you're going to bring cognitive control networks back online.
So being a creative genius is sort of like the opposite of being, you know, operating that intelligence.
I don't know about the opposite. It's like Professor Rex says, there's a tension between it. It's a different type of brain operation. So it's slower and you're looking for novelty and usefulness versus, you know, intelligent thinking where you're trying to do something quickly and accurately. It's almost like this has to happen before you can do the kind of the rule-based deductive reasoning. So abductive reasoning, yeah, comes before deductive reasoning, where you're trying to figure out new stuff.
So you sort of lay out the landscape of possibilities.
Like, you're kind of like you're doing best guesses about something. So you're kind of looking at a situation that you can't quite figure out and being like, well, it might be this, or it might be this, or it might be this, or it might be this. And then once you've established what it is, then you would be using deductive reasoning because you're like, oh yeah, I know how this works now. And now I can figure whatever the problem is out. What's interesting is that there's really interesting studies that have been done where, so your frontal lobe is quite dominant, and that's where that kind of, you know, the error checker is. If you inhibit that, so for example, if someone has a kind of frontotemporal dementia, you can see often that they will, having never shown any sort of interest in art or painting or whatever, these dementia patients start just to having this uncontrollable urge to paint and create. So, you know, like guys who've got this dementia, you know, just painting canvases, having never painted before in their lives, or doing pottery, having never done it. Like sort of quite obvious expressions of creativity that have been totally absent previously, but removing this kind of check on creativity, they start to express themselves. I think it's probably slightly over-egged, the kind of conclusions about that.
Because, the idea of sort of brain damage, madness equals creativity kind of thing.
Well, partly that, but partly I think it's just a bit more complex than if you damage the front bit of your brain, it's going to unleash creativity.
Oh, I'll cross that off my things to do at the weekend then.
Yeah. Yeah. And that sort of artistic creativity is just one very narrow bit of creativity. And so you'd need to do, and I don't think these have been done, you'd need to do tests on those kind of patients with all of the different types of creativity to see what's happening there. And this might just be a special case. Still, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I like the idea of just unleashing, you know, pottery, painting. I mean, it's not something I ever do, obviously. So if I find myself doing any pottery or painting, I'm going to question the integrity of my brain.
It sounds like a really alien thing, like that suddenly your frontal lobes aren't functioning properly. But it kind of happens every time you dream. That's sort of why your dreams are a bit mad, and stuff happens that is not quite real world, and like you're drawing on lots of things. You think about dreams are very creative expressions, and it's just essentially your frontal lobe is kind of shut down to some extent, and lets the rest of the brain run riot.
And there are good examples of people waking up, aren't there, from sleep with, you know, new creative ideas.
Yeah. There's a great story about Keith Richards going to sleep, and he had a guitar and a tape recorder by his bed, and then when he woke up, he saw that the tape was at the end, and he was like, I don't know why that is, but he rewound the tape, played it, and sort of recorded in his sleep, effectively, was the verse from I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
Nice.
And he'd just done that in his sleep.
All right, so we know a fair bit about what's happening with the brain, but basically what I want to know is genius set from birth? Can I develop it? Tell me I can develop it.
You can't.
Okay, so let me introduce you now to twin Paula and Peter Imarfadon is their name. They've just passed the University of Cambridge Advanced Maths A-Level, and you've guessed it, they're just 8 years old. And they're here now with Dad Chris and Sister Samantha, who's not half bad at maths herself, I have to say.
When people talk about any behavioural characteristic being innate or nature or nurture, well, it's always a bit of both. It's a false dichotomy. It's always a bit of both. And with genius, the best estimate is that it's a 50-50 split. About 50% of the capacity for high intelligence, high creativity, high ability in just about anything comes from your parents, which is genetic, and the other 50% also comes from your parents through their environmental influence on you and your friends and family and other environmental influences.
How do you explain this? Are you and your wife good at maths?
Oh, no, I'm not a mathematician. Not as my wife, but the big sisters like playing the number game, so they want to outdo each other. So anything that is competitive then becomes something that drives up.
So this goes right through all your children?
Yes.
Intelligence appears to be under very limited environmental constraints. The studies have been done, and now meta-analyses have been done that demonstrate that certainly education and knowledge acquisition is extremely important to the development and manifestation of your intellectual capacity.
Today, the new international reading, math, and science scores were released, and Chinese students left American teens in the dust in all three categories.
There's a lot of ways that you can diminish intelligence, but there are a few ways that you can enhance intelligence, if any. I'm a bit more hopeful for creativity and thus the expression of genius, if such a thing exists, in that creative capacity, that generation of novelty, for example, and the cultivation of openness that allows people to determine that they have an aptitude or ability in a certain area and are able to pursue that could be instilled or engendered in an educational setting.
On average, Chinese students attend 41 more days of school every year. And with some attending classes on the weekends, it amounts to 30% more hours of instruction every year, too.
So genetics is playing a big role here. There's no getting away from it.
No, there isn't. And it's pretty contentious because it's not what people really want to hear. But when you look at twin studies, there's a guy, Professor Robert Plomin, who runs the Twins Early Development Study, TED. Mm.
Oh, nice.
It's twins born in England and Wales in the mid-90s, I think. And obviously, twins are absolutely ideal for doing these kind of studies because you can really start to unpick the genetic component, particularly with identical twins because they've got 100% shared DNA.
They're almost as good as babies on an island, aren't they?
Nothing is as good as babies on an island. You and I both know that. But it turns out that IQ is very heritable. So clever parents are more likely to have clever kids. And like Professor Rex was saying, there's not much you can do to increase the IQ or, you know, it slash intelligence of your child. It can diminish, but unlikely to increase. And what's really fascinating is that that heritability, so if it starts at around 50%, will actually increase as you get older. I mean, at first hearing, you're like, what? That makes no sense. But I think it's because you sort of follow the path that your genotype is setting out for you. So if you are good at certain things, you will pursue those things and you'll start to reinforce it. So you become more and more aligned with your genotype.
Okay, so it becomes more manifest the older you get, effectively, because those are the things that you've really honed nicely.
Yeah. So it could end up being sort of 80% heritable.
What exactly do you mean by heritability?
Yeah, so it's slightly complicated and probably not what people immediately think it means. You say, what's the proportion of the variation in a given trait? So what's the proportion in the variation of intelligence within a group, so within a population, that can't be explained by environment or random events? So it's not about the individual. So, you know, even though someone might be genetically predisposed to being fat, let's say. And actually, I think being overweight is quite heritable.
Yeah.
So if you look at, again, twins, and you look at one who has never lived with their parents, they're still more likely to be fat if the parents were fat, irrespective of what their adoptive parents are like.
In 1905, there were hundreds of professors renowned for their study of the universe, but it was a 26-year-old Swiss patent clerk doing physics in his spare time would change the world. Can you imagine if Einstein would have given that up just to get drunk with his buddies in Vienna every night? We all would have lost something.
Pretty dramatic, Jerry.
No, it isn't, Sean. This boy has that gift. He just hasn't got the direction, but we can give that to him.
So you can't do much about your genetics. Is there any good news on the nurture side of things?
Yes. Yeah, there is, actually. So there's this famous 1995 study which found that wealthy children will hear 30 million more words than poor children by the time that they're three. So not as in the vocab, but just there will be 30 million more words spoken at them or they'll hear.
Yeah. So there'll be far more conversation going on, effectively.
Yes. And what that initially made people think is you just need to just be talking at them, like watching the TV, whatever it is, just like get that going. So they're hearing loads of words, like dumping words on them. But recent research says that it's not really the amount of words, because you can kind of strip away the effect of socioeconomic privilege, and that accounts for all of the differences that they were seeing.
Okay.
Not the words. But what is important is these things called conversational turns. So effectively back and forth. And that back and forth can be, you know, even pre-speech for the child. So if the child is gurgling and you saying, oh, what was that you said? And then the child will gurgle again. And so just like practicing that back and forth and having conversations, it is the most important thing. And the more conversational turns that a child is exposed to and involved with, the better they'll do on kind of standard tests, sort of literacy tests and so on. Which is sort of amazing.
That's surprising, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I can't think why that is.
Do you want me to say why?
Yeah, go on.
I don't know. There's another great experiment where infants were studied when they were trying to learn Mandarin. They did it in three different ways. So some had a teacher, others had the same teacher but on a screen, and then the third ones just had an audio recording. The ones with the human teacher live in front of them learnt Mandarin. The other two couldn't. And then you could sort of go a bit further with that to try and work out what's going on and see that if the video was then live so that you could have back and forth, so the person in the video responds just like a live person, then the kids again can learn. But if it's just a pre-recorded video, they learn nothing. So they're kind of like that back and forth and the social aspects are really, really important for cognitive development.
So we need AI teachers, not just sort of virtual teachers on a YouTube video.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Look, you're my best friend, so don't take this the wrong way. In 20 years, if you're still living here, coming over to my house to watch the Patriots game, you're still working construction, I'll fucking kill you. That's not a threat. What? That's a fact. I'll fucking kill you.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Look, you're sitting on a winning lottery ticket. You're too much of a pussy to cash it in. And that's bullshit. Because I'd do fucking anything to have what you got. So would any of these fucking guys.
All right, so let's go back and run down the question. Is genius innate?
I think, and this ties very neatly in with Good Will Hunting, you will have people who have the genetic characteristics that are required to be a genius, but they won't have the opportunity to express that genius.
Right.
And then, so they could still be a genius, but you'd never know about it. That sucks.
Like yeah.
You'd rather not be a genius, full stop, wouldn't you?
Do you think they know they have the potential to be a genius?
Well, they're really clever. They probably know most stuff.
That's got to hurt, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think you need lots of things to go right for you. So you need the right genetics. You probably don't need to be scoring massively highly on an IQ test. You need to have that sort of determination to just keep on going. You need to be really productive. There's probably going to be a genetic component of that as well. You need to be in the right kind of environment where you can express your genius, and you need creativity. So there's quite a lot of things that need to all come together.
Yeah, it has to be that the stars align and then you get a genius.
But I'm sure there's going to be an awful lot of people who have some of the ingredients to be a genius but will never be expressed, never be realised. Sad for them.
Yeah.
I feel glad I'm not a genius. Science-ish is a Radio Wolfgang production presented by me, Rick Edwards, and Dr. Michael Brooks. The producers were Cormac McAuliffe and L. Scott. Sound design by Ivor Slayer-Manley. Special thanks to Professor Rex Jung. If you like the show, please subscribe and rate and review us on whatever app or wherever it is you listen to your podcasts. You can also find us on Twitter at science_ish.
I've met a lot of people who claim to be geniuses, just undiscovered, unacknowledged.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Like who?
People write to me all the time with their theories of the universe and saying, just read this. It solves everything you talk about in, you know, such and such.
Mm.
And I never, ever read them. Just matter of public information, I never, ever read them.
You might be missing some absolute gold.
I know. I think that every single time.
Well, why don't you read them?
Because I haven't got time.
Yes, you have.
Or inclination. More to the point.
Inclination is the key thing.
That's not my job.
A friend is someone that can still help you even when they can't be there in person. Like with the friendly new Bank of Ireland third level current account. With it, you get a debit card that's biosourced and actually made from 82% corn. How cool is that? And you can also partner it up with your phone to use Apple Pay to buy things, even if you don't have your card on you. You can apply for your friendly new third level current account in just 6 minutes at bankofireland.com/student. Terms and conditions apply. Bank of Ireland is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.